Will you turn to Ezekiel 1? Ezekiel saw the glory of God, and this is what it looked like. Ezekiel was 30 years old. He was a priest in exile in Babylon and had the most remarkable vision of God. Before Ezekiel, no one had ever seen God anything like this. And after Ezekiel, they just borrowed from him, especially Daniel and Revelation. But this thing sort of blew the lid off anything else that had happened. And the central message of Ezekiel's vision is that God in all his power is completely mobile. God in his heavenly majesty and power and holiness can show up anywhere at any time in the full glory of his heavenly presence. The full royal glory of his presence and throne moves like lightning. It is not bound to Jerusalem and is not bound to heaven. It shows up anywhere he wants it to. But first, some history. Now, we've covered the three invasions before in one of the Jeremiah sermons. We're continuing the tour of the prophets. We did Isaiah and Jeremiah, and now we'll do four or six on Ezekiel. Depends how much fun I'm having. So, the three invasions are described in 2 Kings 24 and 25. So, first invasion, the powerful Babylonians invaded Judah the first time in about 605 BC. And to make peace and not be destroyed, Judah emptied their treasures. They took many treasures out of the temple and out of the king's palace, all that Hezekiah had showed the Babylonians 100 years before. And so Judah paid a big price to the Babylonians to go home and leave them in peace. And the deal was they shall pay every year, fairly heavy tax burden. The Babylonians also took their best young people. Daniel and his three friends were a part of this. The Babylonians would trade them and use them. So that's the first invasion. The second invasion, a few years after the first invasion, the Jews rebelled against Babylon. They stopped paying taxes. They would take their chances. The Babylonian army came back in 598. So that's about 7 years after the first invasion, the second invasion happens. And this time they were much more severe. They intended to teach the Jews a lesson. They killed many people and they took 8,000 to 10,000 exiles back to Babylon. Jeremiah, still in Jerusalem, wrote a letter to the exiles, and we talked about, settle down, live there, you're not coming back soon. You're going to be there for 70 years. So the Babylonians at that time, in the second invasion, also took the David king, Jehoiakim, as a prisoner. This means God had let the David king be captured by the pagans and taken away as a prisoner. Very alarming. So, Ezekiel was in that group. He's in that 8,000 to 10,000 people taken to Babylon after the second invasion. So, he dates his vision as happening when he was 30 in the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim. He dates everything by the exile of King Jehoiakim. That was a tragedy immeasurable. That's where he dates things, that God let the king, the David king. So he gets his vision the fifth year after the second invasion. From the second invasion to the third invasion took 11 years. Okay, the first gap is 7. The second gap is 11. After 11 years, the Jews rebelled again, stopped paying taxes. And that time the Babylonians came and destroyed the city and destroyed the temple and took everybody left to Babylon. So the years between the second and third invasions are sort of the end of Jeremiah's ministry and the beginning of Ezekiel's. Okay, they overlap in that way. Keeping in mind that Jeremiah was in Jerusalem this whole time and Ezekiel was part of that first big group of exiles, and so he has his vision in Babylon. Now we're going to talk about cherubim for a bit, and then we're going to start with Ezekiel 1. Most of Ezekiel's vision is not actually of God himself or the throne of God. It's the four living creatures. Pretty well 20 verses, more than two-thirds of this vision is about these four. So we'll start with Moses. Everything starts with Moses, really. Moses led the Israelites out of Egypt, and there at Mount Sinai, God told Moses how to make the tabernacle. And the tabernacle in the Holy of Holies where God was, there's a golden box about the size of a coffee table. And on the lid, there are two gold angels with wings, two wings each engraved, cherubim, they're called. And they understood God as enthroned either between those cherubim or in that space right above it in the Holy of Holies on the ark. In the ancient world, a king would have two powerful guards standing beside his throne in case somebody wanted to assassinate the king, which was not that unusual. So when he's in office, he's got two guards beside his throne. They will be unquestionable loyal. You can't bribe them to turn against the king. And they're fierce warriors. They should be the last two people in the kingdom you want to fight. And so God does not worry about his enemies killing him, but the cherubim are sort of placed in that role. They are his royal guards' attendants. In Isaiah 6, Isaiah had a vision of God in the temple, and he saw two seraphim, another word for the same thing, six wings each, beside God, around his throne. And they called to each other, holy, holy, holy. So that's the same thing. And Ezekiel sees four of them, and he calls them living creatures. But they got wings, and they're around the throne. Revelation sees four living creatures, same as Ezekiel, and they have six wings each. These are all variations on that same theme. Angels in the Old Testament don't have wings. The only ones that have wings are the ones around the cherubim or the seraphim. Ordinary angels don't have wings. But the cherubim, the seraphim, the attendants have wings. And we're going to find out why today. Okay, so God, let's go to Ezekiel 1 and start reading. Verses 1 to 3, God visits the rejects. God visits the rejects. In my 30th year, in the fourth month, on the fifth day, while I was among the exiles by the Kabar River, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. On the fifth month, it was the fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim, the word of the Lord came to Ezekiel the priest, the son of Buzi, by the Kabar River in the land of the Babylonians. There the hand of the Lord was on him. You need to feel Ezekiel's astonishment. He can hardly believe this. Everything about their setting says God has completely rejected them. He's among the exiles, by the Kabar River to be exact, in Babylon. The fifth year of the exile of King Jehoiakim, God led the David king be captive in the land of the Babylonians. Could any Israelites possibly be more rejected by God? Could any Israelites possibly be farther from his blessing and presence? And there, in that awful place, the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. The word of the Lord came to Ezekiel. Even there, in the land of the Babylonians, beside a Babylonian river, the hand of the Lord was on him. How is that even possible? That's the feeling of this introduction. And let's be clear, these exiles are not godly people. They're not repenting of their sin. They're not humbling themselves. They are stubborn and stiff-necked and resistant to God. And Ezekiel himself is only a little better. This notion that God only shows up when we're particularly spiritual, lose that. Lose it. The Bible doesn't work like that. There are a few that do, but very often it's not like that. These people are not humbling themselves and seeking God. And even there, the heavens were opened, and Ezekiel saw visions of God, and the message of the Lord came to Ezekiel, and the hand of the Lord is on him, because God was not finished with those people. That's why that happened. All right. God visits the rejects. A brilliant storm and four living creatures, verses 4-9. I looked and I saw a windstorm coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal, and in the fire was what looked like four living creatures. In appearance, their form was human, but each of them had four faces and four wings. Their legs were straight. Their feet were like those of a calf and gleamed like burnished bronze. Under their wings, on their four sides, they had human hands. All four of them had faces and wings, and the wings of one touched the wings of another. Each one went straight ahead. They did not turn as they moved. As we saw in Revelation, don't try to make sort of a mechanical picture of all this because it doesn't work. You can't have four living creatures facing four different ways and always on the move and always touching each other. It doesn't really go very well. Probably the most significant thing here is the number four. Four in the Bible suggests earth in some way. Four directions, four corners of earth. These four living creatures, that name, living creature, sounds like earth creatures. Cherubim and seraphim sounds like a heavenly being. But living creatures is what happens on earth. We're living creatures, although they are certainly heavenly beings. So four creatures, four faces, four winds, wings. Under the wings, on their four sides, they have human hands, whatever that means. Four hands, and their basic form is human. So they're very patterned and reflective of what goes on earth. And this is the brilliant storm. All right, verses 10 to 14. Faces, wings, flames, and flashes. Their faces looked like this. Each of the four had the face of a human being, and on the right side had the face of a lion, and on the left, the face of an ox. Each also had the face of an eagle, which we assumed at the back. Such were their faces. Each had two wings spreading out upward, each wing touching that of the creature on either side. Each also had two other wings covering its body. Each one went straight ahead. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, without turning as they went. The appearance of the living creatures was like burning coals of fire or like torches. Fire moved back and forth. Among the creatures, it was bright, and lightning flashed out of it. The creatures sped back and forth like flashes of lightning. It's intended to be totally bewildering. How is Ezekiel supposed to put into words what you can't put into words? But he's supposed to describe it. And so we get words on the page. He's groping to describe something, and he doesn't have words for it. He's never seen anything like that. Faces, human, lion, ox, eagle. The lions are sort of noble of the wild animals. The ox is the most valuable and powerful of a domestic animal, and the eagle is the most honored of birds. Ezekiel is seeing a vision of the glory of God and of the appearance of God. And animal faces are all over this thing. Animals, folks, are not disposable. They are carrying the glory of God, wild and domestic and birds. I'm not saying we shouldn't hunt or use them in that way, but they're not disposable. The glory of God has all these faces on it. Beyond that, these creatures look like fire, like bright torches, and they go anywhere, and they're on the move. They speed back and forth like flashes of lightning. All right. Keep going. Wheels, verses 15 to 21. Wheels. As I looked on the living creatures, I saw a wheel on the ground beside each creature with its four faces. This was the appearance and structure of the wheels. They sparkled like topaz, and all four looked alike. Each appeared to be made like a wheel intersecting a wheel. As they moved, they would go in any one of the four directions the creatures faced. The wheels did not change directions as the creatures went. Their rims were high and awesome, and all four rims were full of eyes all around. The commentary suggests that it's more likely this eyes is actually embedded jewels. It's not eyes that see. It's jeweled wheels. So a wheel intersecting a wheel. Nobody knows what he's talking about, but the most common guess is that a wheel can move two directions, forward and backward. We're doing east and west here. So picture a wheel, and then there is also another wheel intersecting it that goes sort of in 90 degrees, so it can go north and south. And so mechanically, you can't actually make a wheel like that. It would be a nightmare. But he seems to be seeing something like that. The point is, these wheels can go any direction they want without turning. That's the point. Any direction. They don't have to face somewhere else. They can go any direction they want. Verse 19. When the living creatures moved, the wheels beside them moved. And when the living creatures rose from the ground, the wheels also rose. Wherever the spirit would go, they would go, and the wheels would rise along with them, because the spirit of the living creatures is in the wheels. When the creatures moved, they also moved. When the creatures stood still, the wheels also stood still. When the creatures rose from the ground, the wheels rose with them, because the spirit of the living creatures are in the wheels. So they're bound together here, the wheels and the living creatures. So what Ezekiel seems to have in mind is a four-wheeled chariot. The Roman chariots had two wheels, and that's what we see in our movies. But in the ancient world, four-wheeled chariots were fairly common. So you imagine a four-wheeled chariot that God himself has built, and the four living creatures with the wings are both the wheels and the horses. Okay? They are both the wheels and the horses. They can go any direction they want. And what kind of a chariot, if God was going to build himself a four-wheeled chariot to go wherever he wanted to go, what would it look like? This. That's what it would look like. It would be a suitable vehicle for God. So that's basically what's going on here. God rides around in a four-wheeled chariot, and these four living creatures carry it and move it. It's fast. They speed back and forth like flashes of lightning. I'm going to read from a couple of Psalms here that picture God riding on a chariot. He makes his clouds his chariot, and he rides on the wings of the wind. That's only a little different. That's Psalm 104. From Psalm 18, consuming fire comes out of his mouth. Burning coals blaze out of it. He parted the heavens and came down. He mounted the cherubim and flew. So he's flying with wings there, his conveyance, a heavenly chariot. He soared on the wings of the wind. Out of the brightness of his presence, clouds advanced with hailstones and bolts of lightning. So God in a big storm, and when you get closer, you're actually seeing seems to be a heavenly four-wheeled chariot. The crystal platform, verse 22 to 24. The crystal platform begins in Moses. After they made the covenant with God on Mount Sinai, right afterward, and they did this thing with the blood, Moses took the 70 elders and the priests up to Mount Sinai, and there was a clear pavement above their heads, and they saw God, and the elders all saw God, and they had a meal together there. Moses and Aaron and the 70 elders of Israel went up Mount Sinai and saw the God of Israel. Under God's feet was something like a pavement made of sapphire. That's the platform, as bright blue as the sky. God did not raise his hand against these leaders of the Israelites. They saw God and they ate and drank. So God is above this crystal platform. It's blue, but they can see him through it, and they're all below. And they eat and drink there. They have a meal. It's only two or three verses long. It's a very interesting episode. But that's what Ezekiel's talking about. And so that's basically the conveyance. So they're the four living creatures, and above them, verse 22, Ezekiel 1:22, spread out above the heads of the living creatures was what looked like something like a platform, sparkling like crystal and awesome. Under the crystal platform, there were wings were stretched out to one toward another, and each had two wings covering its body. When the creatures moved, I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. When they stood still, they lowered their wings. The crystal platform represents the holiness of God here. In other visions, the seraphim say, holy, holy, holy. There's no message like that. But God is set apart. Everything he made is below, and he's above. And that's just the way it is. And you can see, and he's watching, and we're watching, but there's still that separate. He is, that's what holy means. Holy at its core means set apart, and God himself is set apart. And the only other striking thing here is the power of the wings. I heard the sound of their wings, like the roar of rushing waters, like the voice of the Almighty, like the tumult of an army. So, These four living creatures, I don't know how big or powerful we imagine these things to be. In Isaiah 6, when Isaiah saw those two seraphim, and they called out to each other, holy, 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 Lord God Almighty, the earth is full of his glory. Their voice was powerful enough that the ground shook. Not just the walls of the temple, the ground shook. What kind of thunder makes not just the rattle shake, but the floor vibrate, the ground actually shake? They're not angry. They're just calling worship to each other. These are very substantial beings. And so here, it's not the voice, it's the wing. Their wings sound like, imagine 16 jet engines going at full blast. That's what you got here. The power of these things, just by when their wings are doing what they do to keep this whole thing moving, that's what it sounds like. That's God's transportation. All right, that ends the wheels. God in the likeness of human appearance, verse 25. Then there came a voice from above the platform over their heads as they stood with lowered wings. Above the platform over their heads was what looked like a throne of lapis lazuli, or sapphire, and high above the throne was a figure like that of a man. And I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, as if full of fire. Do you remember that when Ezekiel first saw the storm back in verse 5, at the middle, he saw glowing metal. And he saw fire. Okay? God is at the middle, but we get that at the first, right at the beginning of the vision, and then here we find out what the glowing metal is. That's in verse 5. High above the throne, a figure like that of a man. I saw that from what appeared to be his waist up, he looked like glowing metal, full of fire. From there down, he looked like fire. Brilliant light surrounded him, like the appearance of a rainbow in the clouds on a rainy day. So was the radiance around him. Here's a more literal translation of what's on the throne. Seated above the likeness of a throne was a likeness with a human appearance. A likeness with a human appearance. In Genesis 1, humans, male and female, were made in the image and likeness of God. And here that works in reverse. If humans are made in the image and likeness of God, then God must in some way have the likeness of human appearance. And Ezekiel describes Yahweh, God the Father, as a likeness with a human appearance. Wow, there is nothing like this in the Bible, anywhere else, like that line. We're not talking about the eternal Son. He's talking about Yahweh. That's who he sees. And he is a likeness with human appearance. That is one of the most radical things about this vision. So in verse 5, the living creatures have a human likeness, and here God himself is a likeness with a human appearance. He's not human. That never crossed Ezekiel's mind. But he's a likeness with a human appearance. He's glowing metal, surrounded by a rainbow of brilliant light. So there's lots of color in this. And that's the end of the vision. Basically, the whole vision was the appearance of the likeness of the glory of the Lord. Well, I'd be interested to know what things stand out to you about our vision, this vision. But I'm going to observe two things. One is, God is holy and heavenly, and so are his angels. And yet his presence has the likeness of humans and life on earth. God's glory includes animal faces, earthly life, and God himself are bound together so much that God himself is a likeness with a human appearance. And the image of the full, clear glory of God has got earthly figures all over it. So maybe that's putting the cart before the horse. Maybe the way earth looks like the way it does is because this is how God made things in heaven. In any case, there is a lot of earthly imagery in this appearance of the radiance of the glory of God. And the other thing, the most significant thing here is that God is completely mobile and he does not travel alone. He travels like a king, with royal guards and heavenly staff and royal transportation suitable to the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. When the Almighty Maker of heaven and earth is on the move, what does that look like? Somebody walking down the street with a suitcase? No. No. Ezekiel sees the Lord Almighty on the move, and it seems at first a great fiery windstorm in the distance, and then we get details. It is a four-wheeled chariot put together by the Creator and ruler of the universe, a vehicle suitable to God. This God is completely mobile. God, in all his heavenly majesty and power and holiness, can show up anywhere at any time in the full glory of his presence. The full glory of his royal presence and heavenly throne moves like lightning. It is not bound to a place. He goes where he wants, and he came to Ezekiel among the exiles, rejected and dejected exiles, homeless and disobedient exiles. And God was not finished with him, so he came in full splendor to Ezekiel among the exiles in Babylon. Our God is like this. And he's not finished yet with us as people. Amen. Let's pray.